I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Janet, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
All right, welcome to Sports Talk. It's a Thursday. We're on a shortened leash because we've got NFL football for you. Well, for everybody. For everybody, I'm buying. The bottom line is Seahawks and Rams are coming up at 5:15, and we're out of the contest. We've got baseball's playoffs on in the studio. We've hit the middle of the sixth inning. Big out just recorded by the ATL as the Cardinals had put runners on the corners. Got a pop-up to Freeman in foul territory. So it remains 1-1. And right out of the gate, we got us a grinder. Soon to follow, get Washington at L.A. after that scintillating comeback on Tuesday night. Juan Soto, the big game winner against Milwaukee. And the Nats will run out Slider Jones, Patrick Corbin, taking on Walker Buehler, and the Doyers. There's a couple of non-Power 5 football contest, one on ESPNU, South Alabama, and the other one is, did I say it was Temple? I forgot what the hell it was. Anyway, it's an American Athletic Conference. I know some people are like, college football, I'll watch. It's Temple at Eastern Carolina. The Iterate Pirates hosting the Owls, and we'll have the Rams and the Seahawks. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll get into some Duck-Cal talk with Todd McKim, longtime sports director here in town at both KVAL and KEZI. I've been working for a decade plus now down in Cal. Does a great job covering football and basketball. So we'll check in with him or across the pond, if you will. And what else is going on? Some Pac-12 talk I wanted to get to, as obviously a huge week is upon us, and a lot on the line, because it's just amazing how the way this season has gone. Certain teams already, like, I'm not saying you're dead in the water. I don't just like to throw about the must win, but how about it's a really strong suggestion? And last night, man, the A's fans, and I know there's a bunch of you out there in our area, but is it just painful now? Is it? I mean, at what point is it like, here we go again? Just when, where, how is the misery coming? Because you have to admit, you know it's coming. I mean, they never win a game that they need anymore. You got to go back to, the 89. Remember, when they won it in 89, they swept the Giants. And then they came back. You know, they beat the Bo Sox in the ALCS. Then they surprisingly got swept. And it's just been a misery ever since then. Well, first of all, they went the rest of the 90s without making the playoffs. And then you go back to the Moneyball era. And, was all too well documented, They have not won an elimination game in 46 years. You have to go to Game 7 of the 1973 World Series. The dynasty that won all the marbles in 72, 3, and 4, led by Reggie, who in that series, in Game 7, hit a big jack into the right field seats in Oakland en route to his first World Series Most Valuable Player trophy to take down the Mets, then coached by Yogi Berra. So that's how long we're going back. That's a long time ago. And, of course, you know, the game yesterday could not possibly have gotten off to a more horrific start. The leadoff homer surrendered by Sean Manaea. The offense just had no answer for Charlie Morton in the bullpen. The Rays send them packing 5-1 a year ago. First inning against the Yankees, McCutchen walks. Aaron Judge hits a homer. Down 2-0, needing to keep it close. They go to the bullpen. Fernando Rodney and Blake Treinen get just doused. They threw gasoline on the Flames, and it ends up 7-2. What's up?
I forgot Andrew McCutchen was a Yankee. I forgot the Giants traded him to the McCutchen to the Yankees last year at the deadline. Completely forgot it happened.
Well, could you take my word?
I mean, I believe you, because I had forgotten it happened, but I was just like, it actually shocked me that, like, oh, that's right, that was a move that had to have been made because the Yankees were so far behind the Red Sox and, like, might not have made the playoffs.
No, he played really well for them, and you know, all of a sudden, the guy who looked like he would be a career pirate has been on like three teams in 2 years. But you know, the 2014 loss in the wild card was just misery. They blew a 4-run lead in the eighth inning. The Royals came back and beat them. Then you know, you go back to previous two seasons in an elimination game. They got eliminated both times. They couldn't score a run off of Justin Verlander. They lost 3-0 and 6-0. You know, you get the time in the early 2000s, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, where in the best of five, they lost four straight game fives. 0-1 to the Yankees. Think Jeter flip in game three in 2001. In 2002, the next time you see Moneyball and you see that final baseball scene with Ray Durham popping up against the Twins, that's how that ended. Then in 2003, Pedro Martinez and the Bo Sox, before they broke the curse, they came back and beat the A's before they lost to the Yankees in a Game 7 with the Tim Wakefield gopher ball to Aaron Boone. Yeah, it's amazing. It's just a death knell with this team in the playoffs. It's just a matter of tick, 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 tick. You kind of know what's coming, but it's like, well, how are they going to blow it this time? You know, I guess at least this was merciful to their fans because it was a blowout. Every other one is five games, one run, game five, misery.
Yeah, and then there was that stretch where like they just kept running into Justin Verlander and the Tigers, and it's just like, you know, they had the lead against the Royals, and it's just, ugh. But just,
ugh.
But when you've lost like five of these in a row and you're going into the sixth one and you get the lead and you start thinking, oh, thank God the curse is over, we're finally going to win one of these games, and then they lose, and then you go into the next one and then you lose again, and then you go into the third one and you fall behind in the first inning to the first batter, at that point you're just kind of like really contemplating, do I even want to follow this team anymore? Can I just root for any other baseball team? Yeah, you know what? Actually, let the A's move to Portland and then I can just pick a new team, and maybe just being in a different city will work out better for them, because I can't take any of this anymore.
Yeah, the irony of the bring baseball to Portland movement is now centered in Oakland.
Right.
It's just like there's two movements now. A, keep the Rays in Tampa. B,
right, the Rays keep winning. Let's pick up their stadium and move it to the right side of town. And then the A's keep losing in the playoffs. Let's ship them up to Portland. That vibe fits much better up here anyways.
That would be great. You know, sometimes you find out that, you know, there are bots working for a cause that you would have never figured and where they're based out of. It's like, huh, we've just done some research And 75% of those voting in favor of baseball in Portland seem to be from the East Bay. It's just, you never know. There's a cliche called the straw that broke the camel's back. It exists for a reason. Sometimes it's just like, it's enough. Although, you probably have Red Sox fans and Cubs fans like, hey, screw you. We lasted 86 and 108 years. You guys won it at least in the late 80s and been in it in the 90s. Deal with it. By the way, wow, this inning got away in a hurry. The Braves have gotten their first three hitters on, bases loaded, nobody out, and the proverbial call to the bullpen as St. Louis is in a little bit of trouble here in the bottom of the sixth. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Text us, 321-0824. You could also hit us up on the, I was going to say the Twitter line. You could actually just tweet at us. There's not a special line. The station is at 953 The Score. For the show, it's at Sports Talk 953. For Nick, it is at Rick Nodgers. And in fact, boy, that was one quick response as the St. Louis skipper is coming out, and he is going to make a pitching change. So with the bases loaded, and I take it back. There's one out. The chop is in effect in the ATL, so we'll keep you up. All right, I wanted to get to some Pac-12. So I'm looking at the standings, and it's kind of like a little mini drama unto itself. And I've never been a believer in, you know, you judge the caliber of a conference and you play the league just eats itself alive and they feed on themselves and saying, yeah, that means there's not a great team. It means, you know, because I believe the best teams, the excellent teams, the championship caliber teams abstain from this practice and they decide we're going to eat everybody else. And based on the evidence presented so far in this league, there are no great teams. And I'll tell you, nationally, most would make the case that the Ducks seem legit because of the performance against Auburn, who has had a great start, and that looks like a real high-caliber loss. You know, Washington losing a game at home, even by a point, somewhat damaging. I think they're for real. I think they have a legitimate shot at winning the North and the conference. That defense, some explosive weapons on offense. And they've upgraded at quarterback. I think Jacob Eason is superior to Jake Browning. Taking nothing away from Browning. He won a lot of games. But one guy's an NFL talent who's going to get drafted. And I think Browning may have gotten a UFA, an undrafted free agent shot. I don't think he's on a roster. Top to bottom, Utah has presented a good case. Cal caught the awful break with the Chase Bowers injury. In the South, Arizona, Colorado, USC, they're not national. They don't warrant national consideration. They're contenders in the South. They're the ones who will probably make the best run at the Utes. But Utah, of course, very physical team. They did have what I think was kind of a lapse at the Coliseum against USC. I don't know, maybe they may have been lulled into a false sense of security because, you know, what happened, the season started, JT Daniels was Clay Helton's starter, he went down with an injury, then Kedon Slovis came in, it looked like, well, he's the guy, then he got hurt, so facing a third stringer, Matt Fink, did they let down a bit? You know, they gave up 30 points in that one game, 42 in the other four. And granted, Fink played out of his mind. I mean, the kids showed some brass. I mean, he gets put in there as the third stringer and goes to Graham Harrell and his offensive brain trust and says, you don't need to thin out or tweak the playbook. I've got this. And he had a really good game. But Utah's got an A-plus back in Zach Moss, a terrific all-purpose quarterback in Tyler Huntley. You know, they've got some offensive potential. So I also wanted to go through and kind of run across the Power Five leagues, and this first week of October, who is still unbeaten in conference? I mean, in the ACC, Clemson, I guess you could say barely. Knicks, Wake Forest, Demon Deacons are unbeaten in conference as well. So is Virginia and Duke. That's just four. In the Big 12, really the Big 10, it's five. So half the league is still unblemished in conference. You got Oklahoma, Baylor, TCU, Texas, and West Virginia. One of them are going to fall. We got Longhorns, Mountaineers in Morgantown Saturday afternoon. In the Big 10, remember, it's really 14. You've got that Ohio State machine, Michigan State and Penn State in the East, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota in the West, and somebody's fallen this weekend because you got Spartans, Buckeyes, 4:30 on ABC. That's where the lead team of Fowler, Herbie, and Maria Taylor will be. And in the SEC, obviously, you've got the big three in the West, Alabama, Auburn, LSU. In the East, you've got Florida, Georgia, and Missouri. The marquee matchup, however, this week, we'll check one of them off because you've got Auburn at Gators, the 12:30 CBS game. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You know, it's crazy. You look at the standings, and it's like nobody's played. Well, I take that back. Stanford and USC played early. They've played three games. So they're a third of the way through the schedule already, while Oregon State, Arizona, and Colorado have only played one game. By the way, look at this. They bases loaded, and they just called whoever was up for the Braves with one out.
Francisco Cervelli.
Cervelli on a called third strike. Could they review that, or is that not reviewable?
It's not reviewable.
The ump went for help up the first baseline, and he punched him out. And I tell you, if I'm a Braves fan, I'm like, ooh. You know, normally the wrists break and the bat breaks the plane. That was really, 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 really close. I don't know about that one. But once again, like Nick said, not a lot of opportunity to review that. And so the shortstop, Dansby Swanson, comes up with two outs and the bases loaded in a 1-1 game. Coming up tonight, you've got the Dodgers looking to... I don't think the Dodgers have ever made the World Series three consecutive times in the history of their franchise. I know they've made it twice many times, 77 and 78 in the 1950s. It seems like they played the Yankees a lot, I would say. 1952 and 53, 1955 and 56. Also in 1965 and 1966, they also made it back-to-back. But unless they did it a million years ago as like the Brooklyn Robins, I don't believe that franchise has ever made it three straight World Series. You know, it's even though we're down to eight, I actually forgot to check the odds. I mean, there's no way Houston wasn't the favorite in the American League and L.A. was the favorite in the National League. I don't know how prohibitive of a favorite they are. So, yeah, 52, 53, 55, 56, 65, 66, 77, 78, 2000, and 18, 2017. So I should always trust myself when it comes to that. You know, it's really weird. The World Series did not exist until 1903, but what happened was when Baseball Reference was born, the powers that be, they went back and they like retroactively gave titles, they retroactively gave MVPs, and it's kind of weird because the Brooklyn Bridegrooms in the American Association in 1889, this is they lost the World Series in nine games, 6-3. And how about this? In 1890, this is why you just throw out the records when rivals face each other. they said they tied the World Series 3-3-1. What the hell is that? I love the attendance figures. That year, the team went 86-43, and 121,412 just pushed through the turnstiles. That's three games at Dodger Stadium right now. That's so crazy. How do they determine that? That's crazy. I mean, I'm an analytics guy, sabermetrics. I love the details and the numbers when it comes to baseball. All right, that's too nuts for me. I hear that stuff, and I'm like, you got some problems. Come here, sit down, sit down. All right. And you guy from behind, you know, you give him the shot to kind of disable him so that they could take him away. The nice men in the white jackets and the white coats and the rubber truck go take you away. It's nice soothing music. You wear slippers. It's gonna be okay. You crazy SOBs. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Before we take a break, a shout out to our friends at Big Al State Farm. Man, there's an interesting strike zone developing here tonight. Swanson, just that thing was at his neck and inside, and he hits a rope to short and can't make the play. And a run will score, and Atlanta goes up 3-1 because the ball kicked off the shortstop into short left with two outs, ball on the ground. Well, ball, crack of the bat. Everybody's going home. So Markakis and Donaldson come home, and it's now 3-1 Braves, bottom of the six, runners at first and second, inning still alive. But anyway, back to Big Al State Farm. He wants me to tell you that rates are going down, and it's a golden opportunity for you to capitalize. And what he wants you to do is either call 686-1522 or pop by his office on Cal Young next to Dairy Mart for a free quote. Ooh, I didn't realize. I was actually doing the show. Are they going to rule that a hit or an E5? That was a tough in-between hop that, I mean, what you saw was the third baseman kind of jumped a little bit and it caught him in I'm going to call it the left rib, and then it bounced into a shallow left center field, good enough for two runs. I didn't get the, I'll tell you what, that's one reason you'd want to have Arenado out there or Matt Chapman or Oakland out there. Unfortunately, they're watching it with us. But anyway, back to Big Al State Farm on Cal Young next to Dairy Mart. If you call him for a free quote, he'll not only hook you up with a $10 Amazon gift card, he'll also donate 30 meals to Food for Lane County in your name. Big Al and the folks over at State Farm are incredibly community-oriented. So again, call him 686-1522. Stop by Cal Young next to Dairy Mart, 1195 Cal Young, and ask for a quote. Mention you heard the request here on Crunch Time or Sports Talk. Mention me or Nick or the station or Cumulus, and he'll hook you up. Big Al, here to help life go right. All right, that brings us to a break time. We'll do just that. We'll come back and we'll have a Coors Light update from Nick, and we'll talk some Cal football with Todd McKim next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guarantee.com.
Expected this to happen. For me being playing as a freshman, you know, I knew that I was going to have to take on a role. I kind of feel like I have a natural ability to lead and the charisma, so it wasn't hard. I've been doing punt return all my life, and then kind of being the quarterback of the defense. I used to play quarterback as a kid, so I mean, that wasn't that hard either. So really just knowing what I'm doing so that I can help everybody else. That's the biggest part.
Welcome back to Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. Someday we got to get a camera in here. Maybe no sound, but a camera in here for what goes on. Good luck in prison. That was Javon Holland. I sometimes forget that the dude's a sophomore. He's played 16 games. And that was a question earlier this week, just asking him, you know, you shoulder this burden. It's like he's just willing to do it all. You know, played quarterback when he was younger. He, more often than not, I think, will be the best pure football player on the football field. And, you know, when we had media day and they asked us, you know, pick four guys you wanted to chat with beyond a coach, he was one of them. He's just a joy to watch play this game. All right, welcome back. Sports Talk, the Thursday edition. It's that time of week, game week. We'll zone in on the opponent. And for the past several years prior to Cal, lucky enough to chat up a man of many of you know very well from his days here in Eugene. He's on the Cal broadcast, Joe Starkey, Mike Polotsky on the Cal Bear Sport Network. You can follow on Twitter. The handle is at Todd McKim Sports. Mr. McKim, always our pleasure. How's life treating you these days?
If it was any better, I'd be twins. It's 77 degrees. The sun is out. All is good.
Ah, that sounds magnificent.
It is.
By the way, we've reached the 25th anniversary of Oregon's run to the Rose Bowl. And, of course, everybody thinks of the Jerry Allen radio call. But for those of us who were not at Autzen and watching on TV, we heard you and Ken Woody and your call of, it's a touchdown if he doesn't trip. Todd, when you think of that day, that game, that moment, what still resonates?
Well, obviously, it was the kind of the beginning. It was certainly the turning point of what has turned out to be a phenomenal run by the Ducks over the last 25 years. And you went into that game, and Oregon had struggled throughout much of the season up to that point in time. I mean, there was the Ditch Rich T-shirts and the whole deal. And you know, I mean, who would have thought at that point in time that, you know, that win over Washington would propel Oregon to new heights? I mean, it didn't happen overnight, but that's the seminal moment. I mean, that's the one they play on the scoreboard, and that's the one everybody will remember forever and ever. And what I remember about that is, I mean, for all the world, during the course of that game, it's back and forth, and as the Huskies are driving down the field, it's like the Ducks can't stop Napoleon Kaufman. They can't stop him. And so they don't give him the ball down there. They throw the out route. Kenny Wheaton jumps the route. Damon Heward does an ole at about the 40-yard line, and it's clear sailing into the end zone to win the football game. And then from there, of course, the next week was the really big game because that was against Arizona. And Arizona at that time, Desert Swarm and the whole bit. And the winner of that game, the feeling was, would probably, or could at least, go to the Rose Bowl. And the Ducks win that one 10-9, holding Arizona to three field goals. And Josh Wilcox scores the winning touchdown on a wheel route and in front of about 24,000 people. I mean, it's hard to imagine now, Steve, but there were like 24,000 people in the stadium that day. It was just the true diehards. Nobody had jumped on the bandwagon at that point in time. But after that, they kept it going, went to the Rose Bowl. The following year, the Cotton Bowl. Phil Knight then steps in to give his full support, and off they went.
Yeah, a lot of people forget the victory over Arizona, and all of a sudden it was like, wow, they actually control their own fate in the conference. It was a real, real seminal moment. Todd, before we get to the particulars, as Justin Wilcox has built this program, the quarterback situation has been inconsistent. You know, this year, all of a sudden, Chase Garbers looks like the guy, the huge game-winning drive at Washington. Then he falls on his shoulder, won't play in this one. So beyond this week, you know, what is his status? And I guess, what could you tell us about Devin Monster?
Well, Justin Wilcox announced earlier in the week that Chase Garbers will be out for an extended period of time, and I would imagine at a minimum of probably 6 weeks. So to see him the rest of the regular season, what I would imagine would be doubtful. He might be available in a bowl game, but we're not going to see him for a while. So that means that Devon Monster has to step in. Did not play well, admittedly so, last week against Arizona State. Did not look like he was ready to go in there. Obviously rusty. He hasn't played for, you know, a year and a half. The last time we saw Devon Modster, other than the one throw against Ole Miss in a brief appearance, was against California 2 years ago in the final game of the regular season. Both teams entered the game 5-6. The Bruins had already fired Jim Mora. The winner of the game was going to be bowl eligible, and Josh Rosen gets hurt in the first half, and here comes Devon Modster, highly recruited out of high school, and he beats Cal. He engineers a last-second drive. The Bruins kick a field goal, and the Bruins are bowl eligible, and Cal ends up with yet another 5-7 season. So if he plays anything like that, they got a chance to win some games down the stretch.
This offensive line is really interesting. You've got the bookend tackles, Dal Toso, Jake Curran. They've got like 30 starts apiece. The center is a second-year starter. Then two freshmen at guard. And, of course, the line coach is a legend here in Coach Greatwood. How would you evaluate this group and how they played so far here in 2019?
I mean, they've been okay. They've given up the most sacks in the conference. They've been decent at times in the run game. Dal Toso, as you mentioned, starting at left tackle, but he's a guard. The starting left tackle, Will Craig, who is going to be an outstanding player, got hurt early in the season. He's done for the rest of the year. And then one of their starting guards, Gentle Williams, which is kind of an oxymoron for an offensive lineman, you would think, Gentle Williams. But he gets hurt in camp. He's done for the rest of the year. So the guys that are going to start, two of the five guys, basically aren't going to be here for this season. That means you have to throw in two freshmen. One's a redshirt freshman. The other one's a true freshman, both of which I think have a chance to be really good players eventually. But, again, they're just kind of getting their ears wet facing now the best defense in the league in Oregon. The center, Mike Seffel, coming off a knee injury last year, he's solid. He's a really good football player. And Jake Curhan, the right tackle, has played the most. The most experience. So kind of a patchwork offensive line, Steve. They've done okay, but this will be by far and away their most difficult test today, even more so than the Washington game.
Talking Cal football with Todd McKim, a Duck legend at linebacker, Peter Sermon, has now added the title of co-defensive coordinator. I mean, he's worked with Justin for a long time, SC, Washington, Tennessee. He's also the inside linebacker coach, and that unit's been a little dinged up, far from full strength, got the win at Ole Miss. So led by the All-American Evan Weaver, how healed up are they, and what do you think about this group?
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve. Against Ole Miss, we were missing our first three outside linebackers. They did not play in that game, and so we were playing, a sophomore who didn't play much last year and a true freshman in that game, and they struggled at times. The two inside linebackers, Coy Deng, who was considered the number one JC inside linebacker last year at Independence Community College, a little thin. You know, he's 6'6". He's a rangy guy, but he only weighs about 225, and that's after, you know, big breakfast. But the other guy, Steve, is the guy that makes it all happen. Evan Weaver is a true All-American candidate. He leads the country in tackles. He's got 20 more tackles than any other player in college football. It's remarkable. He wants to make every tackle. He flies around the ball. He's reckless. He plays with extreme confidence. He has an edge to him. He'll be one that Duck fans will want to watch throughout the course of this game. He's a really good player.
Yeah, and that big play to end the Ole Miss game. In this conference, probably a good idea to cover people. Phil Steele rated the secondary the best in the country last year. And over two seasons, the starters have been in there. And, you know, Coach Alexander, I think he says he's got his starters in there 90% of the time. Another year of experience for Cameron Bynum and Ashton Davis. What makes this group so special?
Well, experience, they have a pretty good nose for the football, and when they get there, they've been, throughout the course of the years, really good at actually catching the ball. Usually if you're a defensive back, there's a reason for that. It's because maybe you can't catch the ball. You're not a wide receiver. But these guys have good ball skills. Last year, second in the country to only Utah State in interceptions. But this year, it's been a bit of a drought. They haven't had as many opportunities. Two, they've dropped a couple. They only have two picks so far this season, so way below the numbers that they had a year ago. They're still solid. Even the nickelback will be back this week. Kim, Cameron Beck, who's a really good slot defender. So the five guys that start will be healthy and ready to go. Ashton Davis probably has, at safety, the biggest upside. He's a conference champ in the hurdles, an All-American in the hurdles, great speed, kick return guy, a good size as well. He probably would be of that group, probably the highest rated guy as far as the NFL scouts are concerned.
A couple final thoughts for Todd McKim of the Golden Bears Radio Network. And one thing that stands out when you run the numbers, however, Cal doesn't shoot themselves in the foot. They had just two penalties last week for the week before. I think one game it was even. Otherwise, they've had less flags than the opponent in every game. So safe to say, Justin and his staff, they found that kind of comfortable medium where their guys are in attack mode and aggressive but disciplined?
Yeah, I think that's the key word, Steve, is discipline. In fact, this week you'll have the two best teams in avoiding penalties in the league. Oregon's number one and Cal is number two. So if the officials are working on commissions per penalty, they might not make a lot of money on Saturday.
All right, well, I don't want to be the one who insinuates they're getting paid, especially with the way fans feel about Pac-12 refs to begin with. Lastly, Todd, I always like to get the view from the other side. We live in the Oregon bubble. We hear all the commentary and evaluation from people who cover the program. So in prepping for this game, talking with the coaches and players, what's standing out about the kind of duck team the Golden Bears will face in this one?
It might be the most talented team in the league. Obviously playing phenomenal defense. Andy's done a terrific job taking over from Coach Leavitt. So defensively, they've been just outstanding at all levels. The first level, second level, and then the secondary. So it's going to be tough to score points. And then Justin Herbert, obviously, he's had some of his best moments and some of his worst moments against Cal, ironically. In his first year as a true freshman, came down here, threw six touchdowns, but threw a pick in the second overtime as Cal was able to win by three. And then the next year up at Autzen Stadium 2 years ago, scored a touchdown but broke his collarbone in the process. And then, of course, last year had a really good game, just two touchdowns, but was able to hand the ball off and the Ducks were able to control the line of scrimmage. So obviously he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. The sooner he can graduate, the better for the rest of the league. offensive line is, I mean, you've got four seniors, and quite frankly, the best guy might be Sewell, the tackle, who was, I just saw today, the Outland Trophy Offensive Player of the Month. So the offensive line and the quarterback, and now it looks like they're talented receivers back with Pittman and Schuler. So, I mean, it's going to be a handful for the Bears on Saturday.
Folks, he is Todd McKim. We always look forward to talking with him, be it Cal football or Cal basketball, or a couple of years ago we talked horse racing and wine. He's one of the best in the business. Always great information and insight, Todd. You travel safe, and I hope we run into each other on Saturday.
I hope so. Make sure you keep Ken Woody under check, would you?
I am.
You always got to watch that guy.
Yeah, especially when he's to my right during the pre- and post-game.
No question about it.
Hey, thanks a lot, Todd.
All right, Steve, anytime.
All right, take it easy. Great stuff as always. That brings us to break time. We'll do just that, and we'll return. Oh, yeah, that's right. We're talking trash to end sports talk next. 95.3 The Score.
Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at guarantee.com.
I think obviously all three of our guys deserve the opportunity to pitch the first game of this, you know, in the division series. We just felt that with Walker getting an opportunity to pitch the first game, also potentially a game five, gives us the best chance to win, you know, and regardless of the opponent.
The logic behind starting Walker Buehler in game one over Ryu. And I don't really think Kershaw got much consideration, and I'd always prefer a guy who's either on or close to his regularly scheduled start. Kershaw would have been on 4 days rest. I think you only do that with your back against the wall, and Buehler faces Pat Corbin just past the top of the hour. That'll be game one. All right, now we're into the bottom of the seventh, game one of the National League Divisional Series between the Bravos and the Cardinals. Atlanta up 3-1. All right, it's that time on a Thursday where we wrap the first hour of Sports Talk with something we like to call Talking Trash.
It's time for Talking Trash.
I can't really hear what Jeremy says because I got my two Stanley Cup rings plugged in my ear.
I'm not
not listening to you. You're crazy.
Steven, the guys bring people to the table and decide their fate.
Say what?
Who would bet on Ernie Terrell beating me? I told you I was floating like a butterfly and stinging like a bee.
You know you haven't stopped talking since I came here?
He's afraid to lose. I think what he should do is we should run this race over again so I can kick his ass one more time.
Oh, even Stink would say that stinks.
Son, I got to do better than this.
That's right. It is Talking Trash, brought to you by Lane County Waste Management, Lane County Waste Management Division. With recycling woes in the news so much, it's important to remember recycling works when you recycle the right stuff. Lane County is offering free resources to label bins with the do's and don'ts for offices and multi-tenant buildings. If you're wondering if something is recyclable in Lane County, look it up at lanecounty.org/garbageguru. Lane County Waste Management Division. When in doubt, throw it out. So we bring up trash, trash talk, trash people, trash things. Steve, you're leading off. What do we got?
You know, I'm going to go with Damian Lillard. I'm kind of curious. What's the goal here? You get paid north of $40 million a year to play in the NBA. You got a great rep as a teammate, community member. You play your ass off. You got the legendary series wrapping 40-foot heave to beat the Thunder. But you talk crap to a four-time NBA champ, a three-time NBA Finals MVP, because you rap better? Let's take a poll among Blazer fans. Would you rather Dame own Shaq in rings or get one ring or drop a better tune? So my talking trash is rapping that the Diesel could not have won without Kobe, and he coattailed him on the Miami title, despite the fact he, you know, as an old guy, averaged 18 and 12. So I'm asking if this is just flat-out weak trash-talking by a player who's not really in the other player's league.
I don't know what inspired Shaq in the first place to, like, diss Dame for some reason. Saying that Shaq is a better rapper than Dame, I think, in itself is just wrong, because Dame's put out albums and has actual rappers featured on his albums at the same time. But some of the lines, if, like, you listen to it and you read through the lyrics, Dame got some pretty good burns in there, but I totally get...
But are they real burns?
They're more, like, funny lines that kind of make you... Like, I don't think that they're actually mad at each other or anything like that, and he probably just mentioned Kobe to get Shaq a little bit mad because, you know, those two are always feuding, and if you can deflect the attention off of you back onto the Kobe versus Shaq debate, you could totally do that. I don't know if it's fire, but it's better than recycling level trash. Because also the beat was very good as well.
No, his rapping is good, but I'm saying as a Blazer fan, it's like, I'd rather your rapping suck and you win titles. So I'm deciding what to do with Lillard maybe more than his trash talking.
I think everything levels out and we dump it.
All right.
First up for me, the Sharks-Golden Knights rivalry by many is being heralded as the best in the NHL right now. The two have met in the playoffs the last 2 years, and they had the Wild Game 7 where Vegas blew a 3-0 lead in a series where they had a 3-1 lead. And then they start off the season playing a home-and-home, and it's getting pretty chirpy out there. Sharks fans went to Vegas for the season opener, and they were placing business cards in bathrooms and all over the stadium that had the photo of Melker Carlson's game winner in overtime of Game 7, and on the back of it, it said Sharks 5, Vegas 4, thanks for the memories. The Knights got their first little bit of revenge last night, winning 4-1. The Sharks were sad and tweeting about it. The Knights went back and liked all of the sad tweets. There was also Ryan Reeves of the Knights had some actual trash talk, who was talking about Evander Kane, who was suspended for 3 games for contact with an official during a preseason game, because yes, even preseason games get intense between the two. Reeves said, quote, "Poor Evander, so tragic. I wish he was on the ice. It's always so fun when he's out there, you know? He's weak. He gets taken down by a ref. I guess it happens, no? Gotta hit the gym." The Sharks fans and the Knights thing is kind of petty, but that trash talk is like actual trash talk.
Calling out a guy for getting taken down by a ref? I like that. I'll incinerate his ass. All right. This is a weird one I found on Twitter. And, fanboy trash talking, and even better, fans of the same team. So it's announced the Yankees are not going to put soon-to-be-retired CC Sabathia on the divisional series roster, and not because he kind of stinks, but because he took a cortisone shot in his pitching shoulder, and the pain hasn't been alleviated enough. So one Yankee fan whose Twitter account had pinstripes and something like NYFan23, obviously a Mattingly fan, says, "The team is being disrespectful to a vet like that who's pitched his heart out." Another Yankee fan explains, "There's roster limitations. He can't pitch, and you need as many guys available as possible." And Fanboy says, "Well, the league should make an exception."
Oh, no.
The other guy posts a Photoshop picture of Wally and the Beeve from Leave It to Beaver, with Wally yelling, so it's Photoshop, those two talking to each other, and the caption over the Photoshop is, "Golly gee, Beeve, stay off the effing internet." But he spells out the word.
Oh, boy.
Leave It to Beaver trash talk rates how?
I just think these guys are idiots.
They are complete idiots.
I want to incinerate them, but going to a meme isn't great trash talk. It's just kind of, that's like, you know, the level one of internet talk. It's like, yeah, I posted a funny picture. What are we going to do now? Well, okay, I'll post a funny picture. And that's just not good trash
talk. Well, the bottom line is, the one guy actually felt, even though, because as a Yankee fan, he was entitled for an exception. And the other guy burned him with Leave It to Beaver trash talk.
Can we burn then, but recycle the trash talk?
Yes, whatever you feel.
All right.
I like the recycle. We don't use that enough.
I could only hit one button, and we haven't used the recycle one yet, so I want that. Last one for me. My other trash talk has to do with soccer, because why wouldn't I go with soccer? Bayern Munich incinerated Tottenham on Tuesday, winning 7-2 thanks to four goals from Serge Gnabry. Gnabry used to play for Arsenal for about 4 years, and he was told he wasn't good enough to play in the Premier League, and now he's scoring four goals in the Champions League with one of the best teams in the world. The key here is knowing about the North London Derby, which is between Arsenal and Tottenham, and they hate each other. Gnabry ended his career night after scoring four goals, tweeting some pictures and tweeting, "North London is red," sticking to those Arsenal roots of always forever hating Tottenham. What do we think of "North London is red" after beating Arsenal? Or beating Tottenham?
Well, I'm going to have to lean on you for this one, because I don't understand the misery.
It's just a little jab. I don't like Tottenham because I played for Arsenal. I'm playing against Tottenham. Bayern Munich wear red. Arsenal wear red. When you win against Tottenham in a derby like the North London Derby, you know, the town is white. The town is red.
I will say this. I love European trash talk. So I would vote in favor.
I'll dump it.
And that brings us to the top of the hour. What we'll do is, looking ahead to an abbreviated 5 o'clock hour, we'll only have about 13, 14 minutes. How about a little preview of Seahawks-Rams coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
But man, y'all got a coconut up.
Well, hello there. Very rarely do I get to welcome you to the top of the 5 o'clock hour and say we're kind of into the home stretch of our stay with you on a Thursday, because Thursday night football takes us to Seattle and the Rams and the Seahawks. And Atlanta with a 3-1 lead over St. Louis heading into the top of the 8th, and Paul Goldschmidt said, nope, 3-2, boom. Left field seats. We got us a ball game with Molina now at the bat facing the Atlanta bullpen. And so that is the first out of the 8th inning. The NFL week begins right here. By the way, I want to thank Todd McKim of the Cal Bears Radio Network for joining us. I want to invite you to join us tomorrow morning for Duck Talk Live, the IHOP at Gateway. Our special guest will be Jerry Allen. If you can't make it down there, for free pancakes courtesy of IHOP and our friends at Bi-Mart. You can listen to us on a rock station in 96.1 KZL. And tomorrow, doing Crunch Time and Sports Talk live from Quacker's Last Stop in the Big Y Shopping Center in West Eugene. And that's part of Coors Light Frost Brewed Friday, so a lot going on. Always the week of a game. Ducks and Cal, 5 o'clock kickoff at Autzen Stadium here in town on Saturday. So we'll be out of here at about 5:15 to bring you Rams Seahawks and L.A. in bounce-back mode from a tough loss. Ram defense, I don't know, I'm starting to think their reputation is better than their D. Last year, by the numbers, 20th in points allowed. So, you know, there's only 12 teams worse. I kind of was surprised when I researched and found that out. But, you know, with the kind of offensive season they had, they scored more points than everybody but one. They've got great playmates. You know, teams now realize don't let Aaron Donald do some damage. And coming off the AP Defensive Player of the Year performance, which included 20 and a half sacks, he's got one sack through four so far in 2019. They made some moves during the offseason, veteran-wise for sure. Eric Weddle, who, of course, along with Clay Matthews, played here in conference at Utah and USC. Weddle came over from the Baltimore Ravens, 34 years old, to play safety. The Packers decided not to re-up Matthews, now 33. He's been playing great, little fountain of youth action there. He's got five sacks through four games and one sack each in at least all of them. Is he the same all-pro caliber player he was in his heyday in Titletown? Remains to be seen. They also acquired Aqib Talib. He plays on the corner. He's now 33. But, you know, the performance of the defense last week obviously was, well, disappointing, to say the least. As for Seattle, looks like Zeke Ansah will be in there on the defensive line. Rashad Penny back in the running back rotation. Their fourth-year guy from Maryland, Quinton Jefferson, was able to go full tilt in practice. And after opening the season with a couple of sacks against the Bengals, he's yet to record number three. But the defense last week did a really, really good job kind of keeping Kyler Murray, who's very explosive, kind of in a box. And, you know, they kind of cruised to a nice 27-10 road win. By the way, with one out, the Cardinals back-to-back base knocks to put the tying run now at second, go-ahead run at first. So the plot thickens. But Jadeveon Clowney had his first big, I guess I would call it a Seahawk moment. That silly athletic pick six came late in the first quarter when they were up 3-0. And on the play, I was watching the film. So KJ Wright comes up to the line of scrimmage outside the right tackle. So he's next to the left end, to Murray's right. And of course, you want to mix your coverages and your blitzes and whatever schemes you've come up with to crash the pocket against a rookie quarterback. And Wright rushes the passer, was not accounted for. The Cardinal running back, David Johnson, did kind of a horrible job picking him up. I'm going to call it the Olé. And it looked like Wright may have just gotten a little piece of it to slow it down. Clowney goes up, picks it off, races to the outside, and outruns one of the big lummox offensive linemen of Arizona, J.R. Sweezy. And once he beat him to the corner, bye-bye. Nothing but green and white in front of him for the touchdown. And, you know, The performance wasn't a thing of beauty, but, man, they made plays when they had to. They got the Cardinals off the field, just three third-down conversions, nine chances. Wilson, despite getting sacked four times, made enough plays. And, man, they had one of those back-breaking, game-wrapping touchdown drives to answer the only TD of the game for Arizona. So, Murray took him in. It's 20-3, makes it 20-10. And there's still a bunch of time left in the game, 10 and a half minutes to go. And momentum, you know, off the score, leaning a little bit the Cardinals' way. And so what happens? Wilson takes the Seahawks on a 15-play, 81-yard drive. And more importantly, eats up more than 8 minutes. And Wilson was money. One holding penalty looked like it was going to hinder the progress of the drive. Third and long. He hits Luke Wilson, moves the chains for 17 yards. Then on the next sequence of downs, it's 3rd and 10. He hits Tyler Lockett. Great effort. 3rd and 10, they gain 11. That puts him in business at the Cardinal 26. So already they're well within field goal range, but still, that would have left the door open up 2 scores. Then they got a big run by Chris Carson, who had the damaging fumble, the scoop and score the week before. So that sets them up goal to go inside the 10. Then there's a pass interference on the Cardinals. Then C.J. Prosse, in essence, closes the deal from 9 yards out.
Procise.
What did I say? Prosse?
You did.
Why would I say that?
I don't know. Did you say that?
I'll tell you why. I wrote it down wrong.
Okay. Don't do that next time, just so you know.
All right, thanks. CJ Procise, closes the deal 9 yards out. Turn out the lights. The party's over. And in this game, by the way, odds makers have it airtight and out of sight. The home team is a short 1-point favorite. The over-under in this game is 49. So should be a good start to the week that will be in the NFL. Obviously, I mentioned earlier, we've got some college foosball games. None all that scintillating. I sense my last button on my Xfinity remote is going to get a workout between... actually, you know what? This is this NFL Network / Fox tonight? I know... we're watching the playoff game on TBS. Yeah, again, so I guess we're getting Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. An actual tip-off. Kickoff is slated for 5:20. So I guess if you want to get a quickie in, 284-8571. Otherwise, we're about on our merry way. We'll have the call, of course, with the Seahawks. We, in essence, provide you their pregame show. Looking ahead to tomorrow, Friday, I mentioned a lot of stuff. It's going to be a long but a fun day starting at the IHOP. We'll talk with Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. Break down all the action. Lee's been really on a hot streak picking games. Aaron Fentress of Comcast. Oh, no. Whoa. I slipped up. Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. At least I didn't call it The Atlantic. Will join us. He normally we have him on a Thursday, but with our short show and the fact that part of his job with The Athletic, he's actually at the stadium covering this game. So a big Friday coming at you live as part of a Coors Light Frost Brewed Friday from one of my favorite haunts in town, Quacker's Last Stop. So we got that going for us, which is nice. What other insanity is happening around the world of sports today? Oh, I'm reading that story, and I love some good sarcasm. So the Jets quarterback Sam Darnold says, I feel ready to play, but the doctors told me it's dangerous because of my bout with mononucleosis, and I don't want to risk my life. And the first thought is, slacker. Call yourself a football player. Typical millennial facing a challenge and just going to throw in the towel. But so he's got that going for him, which is nice.
As someone who also had mono around Sam Darnold's age, I too gave up on football when I had mono.
Yeah, is that when your NFL dream truly died?
That was about it. I still had a lot of, you know, like, I still had my college eligibility ahead of me, so I could have, you know, redshirted, transferred, gone somewhere, but I also would have been yelled at for using the transfer portal at that time. Really, it was a lose-lose for me, because it was either, hey, look at this millennial giving up on football because of mono, or look at this guy using the transfer portal, he's so weak, why doesn't he compete for a job? And I just, you know, it was a lose-lose, I retired right then on the spot.
Did you have a press conference? Did you sign a one-day contract with the Falcons and announce your retirement from the NFL?
I told the nurses, I said, you know what, I think this is going to be the end of my NFL career. And they were very confused. They're like, oh, are you on the football team? Like, no, you can come back from this. It's totally fine. You know, like, football isn't even happening this time of year. And I was just like, no, this is it. I'm done. See you later, guys. I gave up. Right then.
And by the way, at that moment, you could just sense all the GMs and personnel people in the NFL going back into their war room and having to rework their draft board.
Bill Belichick sent me many a Pony Express letter.
It's not too late.
Asking me to come back because he knew I'd be valuable. I said, Coach, I can't. I've got mono
I've got
for the next
mono,
2 weeks.
Man.
I'm done.
So, what do we got here? A little blooper into left field, and it's fair. And folks, we got us. Oh, plant the plate. He's out. Wow. That was interesting, to say the least. They tie the game, do the Cardinals, but a bang-bang play at the plate. And I don't know about the wisdom with a ball like that. I don't know if he ran through a signal at third base, but he was out by a week. That was some awful base running, or maybe some awful advice from the third base coach. Is that about a wrap for us? Yeah, because I know 2 minutes. I thought we were picking up the coverage at 5:15. I've been misled. As a matter of fact, I've been misled worse than that third base coach right then and there. So anyway, gang, looking ahead at the Pac-12 schedule for this week. Just 4 games, no Friday, no games tonight. They really got it spread out. Arizona at Colorado will start the action on the Pac-12 network. They've got the Buffs as a 4.5-point home chalk over under in this one, 61.5. Our buddy Yogi Roth, who we chatted with this week on the call with Cuckoo Cuckoo Ted Robinson. Oregon, by the way, the 5 o'clock game on Fox proper. They've been installed, obviously, with the injury to Chase Bowers being taken into consideration. And plus, as Todd McKim, who we talked with a little while ago, California is dinged up on the offensive line. They've lost their quarterback. They played Mississippi without their top three outside linebackers. So the Ducks are an 18-point chalk at this, but they're not expecting a lot of points. I mean, when was the last time an Oregon game was under 50? It's 46. UCLA hosting Oregon State at the Rose Bowl. Bruins a 6.5-point home chalk. Now they expect some points in this. I don't know if they expect a lot of points or just a lot of bad defense, but the over-under in this one is 66. And then the evening ends, Pac-12 after dark on ESPN with Stanford, a 6.5-point home underdog to Washington, with the over-under on that one, 51.5. So we'll look forward to joining you on the morrow for Crunch Time and Sports Talk, live from Quackers Last Stop, right here, 95.3, The Score.